welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Murphy. We're joined by the usual rugby crew. Two in a week, boys. Two rugby pods in 1 week. It must be Six Nations time. Are you pumped, Westy? You're pumped. I can see it.
Yeah, it's either Six Nations time or level 5 lockdown. But yeah, let's go Six Nations. Woo!
We've got a Zoom quiz right after this.
Nab's got the virtual chase all lined up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bread is in the oven, ready to go.
Yeah, but that banana bread. But no, it is Six Nations. It's the final weekend. We've got quite the Saturday of rugby. We have 4 games. It's a nightmare for the girlfriends, but they've accepted it, which is great. We've got New Zealand, Australia, Saturday morning. Then we have the 3 last Six Nation games, Wales, Scotland, England, Italy, and then the Pierre de Resistance, which is actually quite fitting because we're playing France, Ireland versus France.
I think you're forgetting probably the most important fixture, and that is Uruguay-Spain.
Sorry, apologies to all my Tier 2 fans out there. Sorry. We'll get on to Tier 2 later on. Yeah, I'm not talking about that kind of sport, though. Rugby. This is a rugby podcast. So
Liverpool 5:30. It's the last Saturday of the midterm. It's got sitting on the couch all over it.
It's the day Sam becomes single, also known as. We'll start with obviously Ireland France game because that's the most important game. Let's not beat around the bush. We'll start with team selection just in case anyone who hasn't seen the team or maybe just wants a refresher. I'll run through it. We've got Keane Healy, Rob Herring, Andrew Porter, Tyke Byrne, James Ryan, Caelan Doris, Will Connors, CJ Stander, Connor Murray, Johnny Sexton, Bundy Aki, Rob Henshaw, Conway and Keenan, and then Jacob Stockton. So same team as last, but Robbie Henshaw obviously coming in for the injured Gary Ringrose. And the bench is the same, but we have Farrell coming in then to replace Henshaw on the bench. So Westy, I'll start with you. I've seen a bit of reaction on Twitter and stuff like that. People kind of not upset, but a bit annoyed that they're not seeing a bit of a different bench or maybe a bit of a different kind of team heading into the France game. What did you think? Were you expecting much of a change? I doubt it, obviously, but were you expecting one?
I wasn't expecting any change. I wasn't very much change in the starting 15, apart from obviously the Gary Ringrose has been injured. I thought we might have seen maybe a change in the back row, although I can't say anybody in that back row who deserved not to retain their spot the following week. I think it's always disappointing when you see the exact same team 2 weeks in a row. You know, like we all want to see kind of different players come in and slightly different styles been played and just a little bit of a change, a little bit of variety coming in. And I think, let's say, well, technically 2 changes out of 23 is a bit jarring. We're like, oh, there's not even like a change up on the bench. And I think as well, the fact that we heard earlier on in the week that Gibson Park was injured or was kind of, you know, nursing something, and I think that was kind of, you thought maybe that, you know, there's gonna be room for a new scrum half. Cooney came into the squad, Marmion's already there. What was going to happen there? I don't know what the story is with Gibson Park now. Is he okay? Like, I don't think it was anything serious to begin with, but I don't think I expected any change to the starting 15. I thought there'd be one or two changes on the bench.
What changes would you have met on the bench?
What changes have I made on the bench?
Let me guess. Are they both Connacht players?
Yeah, I mean, Carthy and Marmo brought in. I'm delighted for David Heffernan to get his spot back on the bench. I would have kept him, but I wouldn't have been surprised if Kelleher had been brought in instead, or if Kelleher had started and Herring had, actually, no, I wouldn't have started. I'd be very surprised if Kelleher had started. But yeah, other than that, surprised with Chris Farrell. I think it's a good decision. There was a talk that was going to be Keith Earls. Keith Earls has a written ability to cover a lot of positions, although I don't know if he actually can cover a lot of positions. I think Peter Mahoney was great from the bench. I wouldn't have switched him out. I don't know. Yeah, Marmion I would have brought in anyway, and probably Carthy.
Yeah. Sam, what about you? What did you think of the selection, and would you have made much changes?
No, I wouldn't. I think that the display last weekend was enough to convince me that players that were on the pitch deserved another chance actually going against France. I think it is probably the strongest available team. Farrell knows better than we do, but, you know, outside of Ringrose being injured since last weekend, I think it is probably the strongest available team. I'm a bit surprised that it's Farrell in on the bench, more so that I just don't see where you get your cover for the back three. Does Henshaw drop into the back three, or, you know, does Keenan drop into fullback and someone go wing if something happens between those three players? Like, that's what my only worry, or maybe Ross Byrne, potentially fullback sort of thing. But it's a, for me, that was where I kind of was a little bit confused about the decision. But then maybe Farrell's just turned around and said, you know, available player or best available player, as opposed to like most suited to position. I think I'm glad Heffernan, Delane, Beelum, who all I thought all had packs when they came on last weekend, were all retained their place from a kind of point of view. That's great to see. You know, and then Gibson Park, you want to hope that he's tight hamstring, that was the reason why Cooney had to join up with the squad this week, or the given reason why Cooney had to join up with the squad this week. You have to hope that doesn't hamper him, because, you know, you want the impact he had last week again against, like, I don't see Murray playing the full 80. Gibson Park would probably get 15, 20 minutes, and you want him to have that same impact that he had last week. So let's hope that whatever injury it was he had isn't evident and he's fully fit for the weekend. I'm excited for Aki Henshaw. I think Henshaw's looked a lot trimmer, a lot fitter than he has in the last couple of years since the lockdown came back, and hopefully he's back out, he's off his injuries. And then, you know, Keenan as well. Keenan, Connor is getting another shot, both fully deserved, absolutely played out of their skin last week. Can't really fault the selection at all. I think people just get disappointed when there's no change because they feel like they've been cheated out of seeing something new. But, you know, this is the team that Farrell reckons he can put out against a strong France team to get four tries and a win. Like, that's, it's going to have to be the best available team. There's not really much room for tinkering. If you want to get that 5 million or so payoff at the end of this, which the IRFU is in dire need of, that's what he needed to do. He needed to go out with the strongest 15. There wasn't really much room for experimenting.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we've said it before in this podcast and other shows as well. Like, these two games became very much must wins. They're always must wins, but the chances of experimenting were very slim just because of how important they are financially. And Farrell is, I'm sure, very aware of this. So I had to reset my expectations personally then, because obviously, yeah, I'd like to see some changes made and some new players come in, but it's not going to happen. And it wasn't going to happen against Italy, and it didn't really happen. It's not going to happen against France, because we have to try and win this game to, one, win the Six Nations, and B, to get that, as you said, that massive payoff that IRFU desperately needs at this stage. So, yeah, look, I think what we'll do is we'll focus on the positives so before we maybe touch on some negatives. But, Westy, what areas in the game can we really get at France? Obviously, like last week against Italy, we were amazing on the ground and at the ruck and turnover. But I think that was more probably to do with Italy not being great in that area either. But what can you see us doing well against France on Saturday?
Yeah, Italy kind of gifted us a few balls. They were very kind of hesitant to guard their own rooks. I think that is an area, again, that we definitely have to dominate in this game. But it's going to be a lot harder when you've got the likes of Olivon and Aldridge in the back row for France. I think so. We'll have to dominate the break, and I think we'll have to try our best to control the tempo of the game. Like, we've seen how fast Dupont and Ntamack can play together, seen how dangerous they are. It might even be a case of us slowing the game down a lot from what we played against Italy, and taking our time to kind of, I don't know, it's a kind of an old cliche, but impose our game on France a bit. I think it's going to be a lot tighter in terms of fluidity. It's going to be much tighter than it was last week against Italy. And I think we're going to see a lot more kicking for territory and strategic placement of the ball. The interesting thing about it is, like, people are highlighting how we need the bonus point to secure the win of the Six Nations, but so do France. So I think it's either going to go, either we need to kind of, I think France are going to come out and they're going to play as loose as they want, because they need the bonus point win to be in contention to win the Six Nations. Ireland could do the same thing, but I imagine we will probably play a tighter game and just try and focus on getting the win in Paris, because that in itself is a very difficult thing to achieve. And the way France are playing now, it's more difficult than ever.
Yeah, agreed. Sam, do you agree with that, or is there anywhere else?
I think getting at France is going to prove extremely difficult. Like, I'm looking at their starting 15 against our starting 15, and all the places where we have, like, our quality. You know, both teams are full of quality across the board, but, like, the likes of Sexton, who has been our talisman for years, you know, he's going up against Ntamack, so it's not like he's going up against someone he can bully. He's going up against someone who is, like, up there with his standard. Dupont at 9, Murray at 9, that's going to be tough. The Vakatawa and Henshaw having a little ding-dong in the centre there, it's going to be extremely, extremely hard. Like Westy said, I think slowing it down a little bit might help us. And, you know, maybe not the return of the box kick, but, you know, more tactical kicking, more kicking in behind, Sexton kicking from deep again like he was the last day, and trying to just get a stranglehold on the game, because the one thing historically we've seen with France is France can be as good as they want, but they have an absolute woeful day in them, and if that can be thrown in this weekend, it'd be extremely helpful for us. Like, yeah. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing Byrne really just kind of secure those breakdowns, get hold of the ball, keep us in possession, keep us ticking over, not necessarily going like gung-ho, but allowing the play to build up to such a time where Keenan, Stockdale and Conway can actually, you know, they can try and get outside a little bit, and that'll happen if you're patient. So hopefully we'll see a bit of patience, see some good build-up play, see some smart play. The last thing we want to do is try and be dragged into an open game against this France team, because you see the way French teams have played, you see the way this French team have played. They're extremely good in the open game. They're such smart Sean Edwards defense. So, like, I wouldn't want to see us trying anything too open too quickly against them. I don't want to be dragged into a game, because that'll just suit them completely.
Yeah, I agree. I think, yeah, the last thing we want to do is get in the shootout, because we're not going to win that battle. But you make a point to Sean Edwards' defense. Their line speed's going to be quick, and it's been quick, you know, all tournament and stuff like that. I saw nothing in that Italy game to suggest that we can handle that. I'm hoping that we have something up our sleeves, but, like, what can we do to combat that? Is it the kicking over the top? Is it pinning them back?
Well, I think not necessarily the kicking over the top, but it's been a bit of a feature of all of the Irish provinces games since lockdown came back, is grubbering through and sticking it through. Like, the weekend, it was about five or six tries between the four provinces games, from grubbers through. Ireland have done it a few times. Henshaw's actually very good at it. Bundy's definitely been working on it, because he's done it a few times in the last couple of months. So that might be a thing. It might not necessarily be over the top, but it might be you want to get up quick to us, we'll get in behind you and try and use that space. It's about Sexton kind of being on it and using that space and getting the players like Henshaw, like Bundy, Keenan, Stockdale, getting them out wide. And then we do have athletic forwards. That's one thing. Like, Keane Healy is back to being an athlete. Porter is an absolute monster. Byrne is huge. Like, Ryan is brilliant. Standard will just go all day. And the Connors and Doris have been unbelievable. So those are the players that they can play as well. So, you know, beating the line speed, stopping that, and nullifying that defense would be huge. But once we have that, I think we can run it and we can play it. I just think it's a matter of being patient with it and not trying it from the kickoff, trying it after you've nullified the defense, after you've gotten a grip on the game, and after you've kind of laid down a marker of possession.
Yeah, Westy, do we have it in us to score those four tries and get that bonus point win? Is it a case of, do we try and tack on points earlier on if we get a couple of penalties, or are we kicking for the corner pretty much from the first minute?
No, I think it's about securing the win, really. I think in the first 20 minutes or so, we're taking our points. I think if the flow of the game goes our way, then we kind of open up as the game goes on. But I think early on, definitely, the goal, like Andy Farrell is telling them to go out there and win. Like, that's the end game for everybody here. If we have a chance to score a fourth try and win the championship, then yeah, we'll take it. But I think we'd be silly to go out there and say, like, oh, there's no point winning unless it's by four tries. Like, I heard someone say in an interview the other day, like, you could score four tries and lose. Like, yeah. You know, it doesn't secure you to win. Like, yeah. So
the game ends. When we score a fourth try, the game ends. He blows the whistle.
But the beauty of this weekend is we'll know exactly what's required come kickoff. It's not like all the games are kicking off coinciding with each other. So it might not necessarily be four tries. It's most likely going to be that to secure it, but it might not necessarily. So, you know, that is the one upside to playing 8:05 in the evening.
It's a ridiculous kickoff time. What is that? That's like 9:05 in France as well. Like, it's insanity.
Yeah. Is it with the times clock going back?
Are they on the same time difference as us now?
I think
of Europe weren't doing daylight savings this year. I don't know. So
five past eight, 9:05. Yeah, it's late. But let's be honest, England's going to put up 40 or 50 points on Italy pretty handily, I would say. Like, they're going to be coming out of the blocks quick, England.
Like, they definitely
Italy have something to sleeve, definitely. Italy were saving themselves for England. You heard it here first.
Imagine there's
a good few English changes as well, though. Like, it's a strong English team, but it's a bit disjointed. That's what I'm holding out hope for, an England fuck-up.
Wow, that must be tough for you to say, Sam.
Although I'm an Irish fan when Ireland are playing, like, you know that.
But. Yeah, England, realistically, yeah, England are going to put up 40. I'm going to say a score difference of 40 points at least. And that would leave us then having to win by, what, 20 or so points, is it? If we are just to win without the bonus point, I think.
Without the bonus point, yeah.
Yeah, without the bonus point, which I don't see that happening unless we have... I don't think we're beating France by 20 points and not scoring 4 tries is my point.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
That's not happening.
Unless it's like the worst game ever, we just kick loads of penalties, which I'm okay with if it is, but it's not going to happen. My question here, boys, and this is the big question that I've been thinking about since I've heard or the build-up to the game, right? I'm going to give you a scenario, okay? Westy, yeah. we'll start with you. We're down 10 points, 20 minutes to go. What are we doing? Who's coming off that bench to make a difference, or what are we going to change? Is there any way we come back and win that game if we're down 10 points, 20 minutes to go?
Yeah, there is, I think. I think, as you said before last week, I think Gibson Park is going to be a big part of that. I think, again, we kind of touched on it last week when we were talking about the Italy game, that there is that kind of more agile bench to come on, that they kind of, and I think it did work. I think it was visible against Italy that we had an injection of tempo when they started to use the bench. Even with the likes of, and I'm a little bit biased here, but with the likes of David Heffernan coming on, like, I think I text you guys the time, the man was everywhere. He hit about 3 or 4 rucks in a row. And even just positioning wise, he was looking for work. And I think that was maybe the case with Ed Byrne and Beelham as well. And I think Gibson Park at scrum half injected pace to an already pretty quick game. So I think it depends how Andy Farrell wants to use that bench. If we're going to see that bench come in early, I say if it's a tight game, we'll see the bench come in slightly earlier to try and push us out. Maybe around the 25 minutes to go mark, around 55 minutes maybe, we'll see Gibson Park come on. Again, Sam raised a good point about coverage. So do you bring Ross Byrne on for Sexton early? Or do you maybe think that somebody can drop the full back and keep someone to move in at centre? I don't know. I mean, again, we could be dropping Henshaw back to full back at some point. But yeah, I think it's probably our halfbacks. With 10 minutes to go, it's our halfbacks who are going to change again.
We hope. Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, it's probably one of the reasons why people are a little disappointed about the bench. And you've seen it on Twitter and on Facebook groups and stuff. Is the bench is like, oh, there's no real world beater, like, you know, Farrell coming on when you're down 10 points. I'd love to live to regret this statement, but I'm not going, oh, yes, big change coming now. Farrell's coming on. He's almost a like for like with your other two centers. You know, he's the same type of player. Keith Earls in that manner, and you know me, I'm not a huge Keith Earls fan, never have been. But Keith Earls comes on with 10 minutes to go or 15 minutes to go, and you're going, oh, he's got something now. This could be, you know, a moment of Keith Earls magic. Like, that's probably where a lot of it, the disappointment comes from people, is like that there's not something that you can see just being a complete rider over his world beater moment.
Peter Mahoney offloads.
Gibson Park coming on for Murray definitely changes the pace of the game. Does Ross Byrne coming on for Sexton change it that much? They're you know, Sexton's a better player than Ross Byrne. Ross Byrne is a good player, he's a very good player, but you know, do you have a world beater coming on if you really are chasing that points, or what do you do? It's quite hard to tell. I'm a bit underwhelmed by, you know, the options off the bench in that regard. But in terms of, like what Wesley said, changing the athleticism, changing the point of attack from your forwards, I was extremely impressed with Ed Byrne, Bieleman, Heffernan, Delan, Peter O'Mahony, all made a difference at the weekend and deserve to be back there again. And you'd love to see that. Like, I think when Delan came on at the weekend, he carried a little bit different, not necessarily harder, but just a little bit different. Bieleman adds that little bit of athleticism to the front row. So it's Heffernan. I think Byrne was playing like a man who wanted to just get out and have fun and kind of prove, you know, stop forgetting about me sort of thing. Like Byrne has been in and around it for years. And I was happy with all of their contributions. I don't know how you change the game drastically if you're in the position you said, which is, you know, with 10 minutes to go, needing 10 points. Like that's where the kind of worry with the bench is for me. But on the whole, I don't think you can really pick a stronger bench. Maybe a little bit of X factor, swapping Farrell out for the likes of an Earls. That's probably the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, it is. I know. And look, if they were world beaters, they wouldn't be on the bench. You know what I mean? That's just how it works, unfortunately. But yeah, I agree. Come off the bench. Look, O'Mahony, who obviously has a Fijian uncle somewhere, because he was just, oh, beautiful. Love to see it. That is beautiful.
When you talk about when you talk about world beaters on the bench, like it is worth keeping in mind. And I know, like, we're saying this isn't the Six Nations to build, but this is still a post World Cup year. Like, you still do have a changing of the guard. Like, we do have to bring in new players. You know, we can't just have the same old folks on the bench in the hopes that they'll deliver because they did it 2 or 3 years ago. Like, we haven't been delivering. We haven't been changing it. We've never changed a game. Like, well, not never, but we very rarely have changed a game mid-game by bringing on a bench. And I hope that that's Farrell's idea now, is to build a bench that can come on and change it.
Yeah, I think just with the question that Smurf asked, if I saw Cooney on the bench instead of Gibson Park or Rothburn, like, I think Gibson Park was very, very good last weekend and has been excellent all season. And I've been saying for years that as soon as he was Irish qualified, he would jump everyone's opinion ahead of Luke McGrath. But if you saw Cooney on the bench, or you saw Keith Earls on the bench, I think you'd have a bit more like, there's time to change. There's a little 10-minute kind of wonder display coming. Whereas I think with Gibson Park, yeah, maybe he can have it in him. It's very early in his Irish career to show that. And Farrell, I'd love to be proven wrong. I'd love to be sitting here next weekend with you two rubbing it in my face that I made the worst call ever and Farrell changed the game. But I think you're bringing on Aki Light or Henjo Light if you're bringing Farrell on. He's a great player, but he's not as good as either of them. Like, I think McCluskey would probably be a better version of Farrell if you were to have him on the bench, sort of thing.
Yeah, but again, he kind of brings the same kind of point of attack.
That's what I mean. They're the same centres. Whereas, like, if you had Henshaw coming on for Ringrose, or Ringrose coming on for Aki, or Ringrose coming on for Henshaw, that's a big change. That's a different player. I think the Farrell, like McCluskey, they're one and the same with this Aki and Henshaw, and Aki and Henshaw were picked because they're better. I don't see there being an X-factor change there. And, you know, don't get me wrong, happy to be proven wrong this weekend. It'd be great for Ireland if we could see that, but I just don't know where you do it. Do you drop Henshaw into Stockdale, put Stockdale out in the wing instead of one of the wingers, put Farrell in? Like, is that too much chopping and changing? I think it's a weird three to have on your bench. I think Farrell was a weird one. I would have picked a utility back as opposed to Farrell there, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'd be disappointed if we are in that scenario though and we don't throw something at them. Do you know what I mean? Like, what do we got to lose? You might as well try something.
Like Andy Farrell just suiting up and going on himself.
Might as well. Like, why? But like, if we don't do anything and just hope that something happens, that's going to annoy me, because that's not going to work. And we've tried that before and it doesn't work. So if we're down in that situation where we need a score later on, let's fucking try something. You know what I mean? Let's stop being... Look, Razzie Erasmus called us out today. It's all over Twitter. He called us softies. And I actually loved it, because it hopefully will spark a bit of fire in the belly of these Irish lads, because that's embarrassing to hear from a rival manager. That is, like, what do you think of those comments? Are those fair? I think they're fair.
I think it's fair.
I read this.
I think it's fair in that, like, he kind of means, like, well, I interpret as deep down we're softies. Like, we're not dicks when we play rugby. Like, we're pretty, like... I don't know, we don't succumb to the dark arts too often. We don't kind of play dirty. We don't do that kind of stuff. I think that's what he means, in that, like, deep down the Irish softies, you know, once you kind of get past the initial kind of hardness, it's, you know, there's no badness kind of thing, I guess. That's how I kind of guess he meant
that. We are a Werther's original.
We did hockey them fucking 2 summers ago. So, like, I don't know who's calling soft, dick.
They won the World Cup last year, Westy.
They didn't beat us. It doesn't count. They didn't beat us. It doesn't count.
This goes back to my
point. They didn't get their chance because we were so soft.
Yeah, because we folded like a cheap suit in the quarterfinals, as always.
We folded like origami against Japan.
But no, this is where it comes back to us. None of the top teams fear us, definitely in the Southern Hemisphere. Like, they don't fear Ireland. They might fear England to a certain degree because of what they've done before, like, and... By all accounts, he said Wales, but I think that was just because they were playing them and he was trying to motivate them. I don't think they actually fear Wales. But, like, that is the case. And I think that's with all the Southern Hemisphere countries and, to an extent, some of the Six Nation teams. I don't know, but...
I think a lot of that might come from player longevity, though. In Ireland, we have a habit of holding on to people a bit too long. Like, you know, South Africans have been playing against Murray and Sexton and Healy for the guts of 10 years now. Mm. They've beaten them a few times. They know them. Whereas I think in England, you're constantly seeing, like, new blood coming through, 20, 30 cap players who have brilliant careers, getting a defeat against New Zealand or Australia or South Africa, then go on to have the rest of their careers gone. But we end up having these 10-year players in Ireland quite often. And it's like, maybe that's just the case with South Africa. Just they have experience of beating us. New Zealand have experience of beating us, and they have experience of going up and consoling Sexton after he's lost again, consoling Murray or Healy, that sort of thing. So that might be where it comes from. Like, I think that we might have two like players with great long careers that we respect because they're long careers, but maybe it's just not fresh enough. Like that Wales team and that England team, they've loads of fresh blood coming through, and you know, I'm a bit jealous of it, and I'm glad that we have this like conveyor belt of Leinster players coming through, and I want to see more of them, because if they're doing so well domestically or in the Pro 14 and in Europe, get them on the Irish stage and let's see what they can do.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll finish on the Irish game. What's our predictions, boys? I'll start. I think I'm hoping. Well, okay, hoping is not a prediction. I think we beat them, but we sneak it. We sneak it, and there's no bonus point. And then we hope that England have a shit day against Italy. That's about it. Sam, what are your predictions?
Yeah, I'm going to say the same. I think we beat them by less than 7, and I don't think there's a bonus point.
Westy, do something. Get off the fence, Westy.
I was going to say beat them by 4. No, fuck it. I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to go France.
Oh, no. I thought you were going to go bonus point.
No. Screw you guys. I'm going with France.
Well, obviously,
France winning is more likely than us winning with a bonus point.
First of all, we should be on to France here, Ben. Look at lads. These aren't going to win it, probably more than likely. So why don't you let us win? Like, nobody wants to see the English win it.
No, especially I think we should be making phone calls. We should be making phone calls to immigration, being like, "Have you seen the coronavirus in France? Don't let them in, lads." And getting that 20-0.
20-0, yeah, exactly.
The women's team, the France women, had to call off their game against the Irish women because they have corona. I want all the men tested. But definitely in the camp somewhere.
The French women's team had agreed to allow the game to be played in Ireland so that it could go ahead, because it wasn't going to be able to go ahead with the semi-pro nature of women's rugby. They weren't going to be able to isolate coming back because of work and stuff. The French women's team were like, okay, we'll go over and play you. So they had done a really good thing, and they now can't travel.
That just shows you never do nice things for people. It only backfires.
No, never.
It'll only backfire. If that game is cancelled, though, what would happen? Would we get the win? Or?
I'd say it'd be a draw.
Yeah,
I don't think they'd give us a 20-point win there. I don't think that's...
No, well, that's a stupid one anyway.
It could be postponed a week. Do you know? You don't know. They might postpone it to January when it's already been postponed once. When I play it in January.
Oh God! Yeah, imagine that. The only game doesn't go ahead. Awful. One game left to play.
But are they going to postpone it after this Nations League thing? I think that they're under pressure to just get rugby play and get the rugby that's scheduled played. I'd say it'll be a nil-all draw. I think that was probably what was agreed.
So England's going to win the whole thing. Oh,
we don't play France in that Nations League, do we?
No.
Not unless we match them in the table. So yeah, you couldn't double up the fixture. So yeah.
No. Yeah, let's hope the game goes ahead, so, because that would be way worse. But yeah, France, let us win and let us get 4 tries. Fucking
no, we don't need them to let us win. We'll win anyway.
Yeah, but just in case it's getting tight towards the end, just, you know, let us walk through. No one wants to see England win this. Not even France, English fans.
If we're 20 points up with 10 minutes to go, just let us score 4 tries.
Yes, that's all I'm asking. Is that too much to ask?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. We'll move on. First game on Saturday is Wales, Scotland, and our boy is back. Finn, back at number 10. The return of the Mac once again. He's back. Adam Hastings, thanks for keeping the seat warm. Off you pop. And he's back. This game is in Scotland or Wales? I can't even remember. Regardless, anyway.
Wales, I think.
It's in Wales.
Yeah, it's in Parky Scarlets, because they've moved it. It's not in Millennium Stadium.
It's in Wales. Wales actually need us to finish above Scotland in the table, which would be quite a good result for Scotland to finish above Wales. But Wales, I think, have the much better preparation, having played a tough France team, whereas Scotland hockeyed the hell out of Georgia, which isn't always necessarily the best preparation for a game. But how do we see this turn out, Westy? I'd say Wales, obviously, probably slight favourites, but it should be a tight game.
Yeah, I think it will be a tight one. I think, the Georgia game doesn't tell you much about Scotland, but their last competitive outing together, you know, they beat France. So, I mean, I really don't think that can be understated at all. I know it was 6 months ago, but hopefully if they're able to carry that confidence through, I think they'll definitely give Wales a good game. Judging by the teams that they've picked, I just think Wales might edge it out. They've got a nice blend of experience and youth coming through. Gareth Davis, the scrum half, I think he was brilliant in the World Cup. I think that's going to be a good one. Josh Adams on a wing is so dangerous. Obviously Lee Halfpenny, Liam Williams back as well. Like, I just think they have a little bit more firepower in Wales, so I'd give it Wales, but I think Scotland will regret them. And as you say, Finn Russell coming back is going to put massive win behind Scottish sails.
No, it's not, because we talked about this before. They were better without him. They bet France without him. I've been on this bandwagon the whole time. Finn Russell's been holding Scotland back. And we're
you
gonna...
just said that you're sold Hastings to get on his bike. You get rich like that.
That's what Scotland said to him, not me. I was just, you know, don't shoot the messenger, Westy. God. We have to shout out before Sam talks about it. Alan Wynne-Jones is going to break the record for most caps, overtaking Richie McCaw. That's incredible. I think 141, is it?
It's including his Lions caps, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know Richie McCaw is going to come in the side and take it back. So
yeah, rob it off him. And the ref won't say anything. I was on a Keane Healy as well for Ireland, reaching the century. One of only, is he the fifth player ever, I think, to become?
Fifth or sixth, I think.
Which is incredible, especially that man's career possibly would have ended twice. He said this is like his third career in an Ireland jersey, which is just incredible. But sorry, Sam interrupted you. Yeah, Scotland, Wales, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, like, I can't see past Wales in this. I'd love Scotland to do it, and I'm excited to see Finn Russell back for Scotland playing. You know, they have a great team. They have Van der Merwe on the bench, Sutherland, brilliant player, Ali Price, Fraser Brown, like, Hamish Watson. You can't fault them. They're a very good team, and they're on the way up. So it'll be a great game. I just think Wales will be a bit too strong, and it being in Wales, like, and then, like what Westy said, the pride of it, Wales have to beat them to finish ahead of them. Wales do not want to finish behind Scotland, especially this year. You know, there's already a good bit of kind of pressure on them just with Gatland leaving and the whole change in management and stuff. So I think they want to finish on a high. Wynne-Jones is going to want to do it in this game. Faletau, brilliant player. Tipperick, like, the strong back row, Dan Biggar, and then Liam Williams, Lee Halfpenny. I think that they've come out with a strong team to win it. So I can't really see past them too much.
Yeah, I think so too. But I don't know. I think it's going to be an incredible game for Finn Russell, or he's going to have just an absolute clanger. There's no in between. There's no like, oh, that was a
why not both?
Game. By, yeah, not well, both? That is very Finn Russell. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So I think he might have a point to prove, or he might just be like, fuck it, it's the last game, who cares?
Your worry with Finn Russell for Scotland is that Finn Russell will play like Racing Finn Russell without Racing players outside. That's the worry.
Yeah, and do dinks over the top and be like...
It's like when you see, you know, if you were ever in school and that one lad that was way better at you than football, way better than everyone at football, and he'd like come down and he'd be passing balls and expecting people to be there, but no one was on the same wavelength as him. Like, that's the same thing with Finn Russell in the Scotland team, is he'd be trying passes, he'd be trying chips. And like you saw with the Vakatawa try, you know, that chip, a Scotland player doesn't make that run assuming it's happening. Like, whereas Vakatawa was there ready for it because they just have this telekinesis thing going.
Stuart Hogg might make that run.
Yeah, Stuart Hogg is up there with the same amount of ability. And I don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good players in that Scotland team, like Van der Merwe to come off the bench, brilliant player. But
you called them shit, Sam. Admit it, you called them shit.
He called them shit.
Oh.
He said that they couldn't keep up with him. He was drinking three bottles and they were only having two.
Yeah, absolute lightweight, he said.
But I think that he's, you know, he's blessed in Racing with the players he has around him. Like, they're players that are, like, it's a team built for that style of rugby. And I'm not sure if Scotland are there yet. You know, Darcy Graham might be there in a while, but I don't know if those, like, Finn Russell-esque passes or chips or that style of play is going to lend itself too well to a bit of a Six Nations last day slog for who comes fourth and who comes fifth.
Yeah, I think it should be a good game, though. I'm hoping for a nice tight one. I think Wales will edge it, though, but I think all eyes...
Lee Halfpenny to score a 70-yard conversion to win it.
Lee Half. Ooh,
he doesn't miss, like.
No, he doesn't. It's actually incredible how accurate that man is. And it doesn't even bend them. They're just lasers. Boom.
Yeah.
If that comes true, Sam, we can upgrade him to Lee Fullpenny.
Hey,
Lee Shilling.
Lee Shilling. Is that what two half pennies is? I don't know.
No, I don't know.
Two half pennies is a penny. They're half pennies. They're clues in the name, Westy. We'll move on to England Italy game. I know there's not much to talk about.
I don't know.
Really.
I don't understand you and your Protestant money eating, you know.
Let's leave the religions out of this, Westy. This is a religion free zone. England versus Italy. Yes, Italy, let's be honest, it's not going to go well for Italy here. They're off the back of a hockey in. England's coming into this game while not having played the Barbarians game called off, but by all accounts had quite the training game. I was actually watching the YouTube videos of them, the next level or whatever it's called. They're very good on social media, the English team. They do some good stuff. Other teams can learn from that, but they look pumped up, they look in good stead. Is there anything, any way that they don't put up 40, 50 points here, Westy?
There's a way they don't. There's a way they don't win by 50 points. You know, it, like Italy, kind of this, in the same way against us. Like Italy do have the potential to cause trouble, and like honestly, like anytime Italy got more than four phases together, they were dangerous against us. Now that happened about twice in the whole game because they weren't protecting their own ball. The hope is that they've learned from that and they'll be a little bit smarter in their decision making. They'll be a little bit sharper in their passing. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to Italy, but it's hard not to see England steamroll them. I think our only hope in terms of points difference is for Italy to, almost the way they did against us, get two or three cheeky tries in, but still lose by about, you know, have the score similar to the Ireland game, 50-21 or something. You know, that's our only hope.
Yeah. Sam?
Yeah, you could look at, you can see a nice Owen Farrell red card early.
No, he's been working on his tackling, Sam.
Yeah, it's only 16 years after he started his
career. He's 29 years old. He's finally working on that tackling.
Sorry, you talk about like, you know, Andy Farrell pulling on Jerry Stevens' favour. How about ringing Owen and saying, yeah, if you want in the will, you know, how about helping us out here?
I don't think Owen's stuck for cash.
Owen Farrell's ringing up Andy Farrell and being like, I don't need your will. I paid the Saracens for the last few years.
Yeah. Faz Industries. Houses. Yeah, Faz Industries are still rolling in the cash, man.
I got paid 16 houses last year.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put my feet up in the championship next year and watch other people make my money for me.
Yeah. I think if anyone's going to be sabotaged, it's going to be Andy, not Owen, unfortunately.
But Owen Farrell, like he'll have a point to prove. He'll definitely come out absolutely swinging. It's an extremely strong.
Not his arms though.
Bad choice of words that one. It's an extremely strong England team. Like the forwards: Mako, Jamie George, Sinclair, Itoje, Hill, Curry, Underhill, Vinopola. Like. That's an extremely strong 1-8. It's the changes are kind of on the bench. They've got a little bit of inexperience on the bench. They're probably hoping to be up by about 50 points by halftime and unload the bench and get some players some experience. You know, can you get a Furbank, Watson, Joseph? Yeah, you could definitely get at them. I don't know if Italy are going to be able to physically keep up with England long enough to get at them, though. Like, those are good players. I think it'll be an extremely tough day for Italy, regardless of how well they play. I think that England team are coming out to prove a point.
Yeah, I think our only hope is that the lack of game time from England is that they're just rusty for the first half and they don't put up the scores that they hope to put up, and then they're under pressure in the second half to get those scores and some mistakes are made. I think that's our only really hope here.
In that contrast to us, the way I was saying, like, you know, Andy Farrell's not going to say, lads, go out there and get a bonus point or don't turn up. I think Eddie Jones is the opposite of that. I think Eddie Jones is like, put 50 points on them or don't come home tonight, Owen.
Well, they have to put up massive number, and they definitely, I think there's no way they don't, but it's just a case of, as you said, Wesley, hopefully Italy can just be a little bit cheeky and nab one back and then just keep that the difference down, because if they do put up 40 and Italy don't score, there's no way we're beating France, as I said, without the bonus point by that much. It's just not happening.
What was the score when Italy played France? Was it 21-0 to France? Was that it?
No, Italy scored against France, didn't they? Italy didn't score against Wales, I don't think, or Scotland.
Maybe I'm thinking of the Scotland result. My point is that if Italy can find that form even, you know, and only lose 21-0, then like we'd be very lucky.
Sorry,
the France game was much closer. Sorry.
Yeah, that's the same. So they have tries in them at the same time. Do you know what I mean? Like that Scotland game, they didn't score any points, but they could have scored three or four tries easily if one pass connected. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, they have firepower. It's just a case of actually getting it over that bloody line.
Yeah, sorry, 17-0 against Scotland. Sorry, that
was my mistake.
If you're building on what you said earlier, Westy, about Italy not securing their own ball very much last week against us, like Itoje, Hill, Curry, and Underhill are not the players you want to be just not securing your ball against. Like
that's a solid point.
And then the absolute athleticism in the front row of Vinopola, George, and Sinclair, like, and then Ellis Genge come off the bench, like that.
Genge is
so horrible to think about trying to play against players like that. And like, I haven't even mentioned Billy Vinopola there. Like,
no. That's like, I think I thought Nigiri had great moments against us. Paledri had one or two turnovers against us. Like, I do really fancy the Italian back row. It's just if they can find a way to make their system work, then
Yeah, they're good looking lads, Westy. I give it to you. We'll leave it on the Australia All Blacks game Saturday morning. At the first game of the they're going by the Tri Nations again, aren't they?
Yeah, the Tri Nations again this year.
Both teams announced, just again, ridiculously talented teams, and it should be another great game. I think my predictions, I think the All Blacks again will just have too much, but this game's in Australia.
It's in Australia. It's in Sydney. I think the Australians are really going to come out. I think the All Blacks will win it in the end, but much like the first game of the series, not the last game from 2 weeks ago, but the one before that, I think that it'll be very, very, very close for a good while anyway. I'm excited to see Lau Mappy back in the squad. He definitely has the ability, like I'm talking earlier with the Irish team. Imagine you have someone of the caliber of Lau Mappy to come off the bench. Like, he can change a game for you. If you need a try, or you're struggling for a bit of kind of flair with 10 minutes to go, bringing on a player like that who wants to come back from injury and prove a point and make sure everyone remembers who he is, like, that's what you want.
Lau Mappy do an El Piero Mahoney on it, offload City.
West, I don't know if he has it in him, to be honest.
I don't think so either.
And he's the only player on the planet capable of doing that. And the unfortunate thing about that Peter O'Mahony offload, because it was the most beautiful offload I've ever seen, but all the footage is stopping before the big Bundy step, which was like,
yeah,
so good as well. I was like, oh man, Bundy's done so well there, but you can't look past the offload. So
I forgot to say, Bundy better introduce himself to Arthur Vincent early and often. I want him down his neck all day, being like, this is going to be a long day for you, buddy. I want him doing that. So hopefully, and it's Bundy, so of course he will. But sorry, Westy. All Blacks, Oz.
Yeah, I think it's a big game for Hoskins Tutu getting his first start. Artie Savea, I think, is on paternity leave. We've got my boy Dalton Papalili on the bench to come on as well, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, he's class.
Yeah, he's no Abraham Papalili, I'm just saying.
The battle of the
Papas. He had a great game. He did have a great game. Caleb Clark starting again. I mean, hopefully he just grows in confidence. I can't see any reason he wouldn't. Barrett's, I think, and even then you don't have, you've got TJ Parnara, Lau Mappy, and Ione on the bench. So you have no 10 on the bench, really. But the idea surely is that if anything happens to Moanga or Barrett, they can swap, and then Jordy can swap into fullback. Or I think it's that kind of, that more dynamic changes they can make in their back.
The beauty
back
of that New Zealand team is they're all out halves, really. Like,
yeah. I don't have the Australian squad in front of me. From what I understand, Matt Tamua is out. I think he's injured from last week. They have made a couple of changes. I saw it earlier. So although they're going to come out swinging, and they have to come out swinging, because otherwise they have the ability to lose the championship here today. Not the championship, but the Bledsoe Cup on Saturday morning. They are slightly not as together as they would have been in the first two tests. So the home advantage could be massive. That could be the making of Australia, but I think this will probably, in a lot of ways, be the toughest test for Australia.
Yeah.
Are crowds allowed in Sydney?
I think it's a limited crowd,
isn't
it? I think it's maybe a limited crowd.
There was limited crowds in Super Rugby AU, I know that, but yeah, I don't know where they're at the moment. Because I know Melbourne went back into lockdown recently, so I'm not sure if Australia, the Woods, as New Zealand were, so.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there's a bit of an atmosphere there, but yeah, Australia are not going to want to concede the Bledsoe Cup, especially on home turf, so should be a great game. I think we're all going to enjoy Saturday. I hope everyone listening to this enjoy Saturday, and hopefully all relationships are fine come Saturday night, but we'll leave it on that, boys. That was fun as always. Thanks for joining me, and we'll recap it all next week.
Cheers, boys.
Bye. See you,
boys. Later.